8. Johnny heard the rumble of a truck above the wind. He looked to the north. An empty truck was approaching at considerable speed, the occupants of the cab invisible to him in this light. From behind that truck to the horizon in the north, it was only empty plain, no other vehicles. He heard another rumble. A plane? He spotted it in the east, approaching slowly just below the overcast. Only a slow-flying drone, scanning for its endless millions of pictures. Well, no real help was coming from those directions. He was on his own. The truck, now quite near, was probably one of theirs and part of this snare. Johnny looked back at the compound. He had a feeling of watchful eyes and danger there. The two Brigante guards were on either side of him, about a pace to the rear. They seemed to be watching this new truck. That they held guns was masked from the truck's view by the ground car's bulk. The huge vehicle roared on by them on the other side of the ground car. It went a short distance up the rise toward Dancer. It stopped suddenly, banging to earth in a cloud of dust as its suspension drive cut off. Somebody leaped down through the dust from the 8-foot height of the cab floor and began to run up the slope toward Dancer. Johnny couldn't believe his eyes. It was Biddy McLeod. He was carrying something in his hand. A crop? A switch? "Biddy!" shouted Johnny in alarm. The boy's voice floated back to him, carried by the wind.
"I'll get the horses, Sir Johnny. That's my job."
Biddy was racing up on the hill.
"Come back!"
shouted Johnny. But the throb of the drone and a rumble of thunder in the mountains drowned his voice. The Russian had had trouble getting his truck level. It had tilted on a boulder. But now he flung open the door and shouted toward Biddy,
"Bitushka! Ostanovka!"
Halt. A sudden spurt of wind and the drone muted his words.
"Vazvratne!"
Return. The boy ran on. He was almost too Dancer to free the lead rope.
"Lord God, Biddy, come back!"
screamed Johnny. It was too late. From behind a boulder just beyond the horse, a Brigante stood up, raised his submachine gun, and fired at full burst directly into the stomach of the running boy. Biddy was slammed back, pummeled by bullets that drove his body into the air. He crashed to earth. The Russian was running forward, trying to unsling the assault rifle from his back, trying to get to Biddy. Two more Brigantes rose into view in different places, and three Thompsons roared. The Russian was cut to pieces. Johnny went berserk. The two Brigante guards stood no chance. With one backward stride, Johnny was behind them. He sent them slamming together like eggshells. He caught the gun of one as that Brigante went down and stamped his heel into the side of the mercenary's skull, crushing it. He reversed the gun and battered the other Brigante with bullets from a range of 3 inches. Johnny dropped on one knee, turned the Thompson on its side so its kick would fan the bullets, and blew the last two Brigantes who had risen to bits. He spun to find the one who had shot Biddy. That one was not in sight. 5 Brigantes rushed from a door in the compound and sent a hail of lead in his direction. The Thompson he had used was jammed. It would not recock. He threw it down and picked up the other one. Totally unmindful of the slugs ripping up the ground, running low and firing as he went, he raced forward toward the fallen Russian. He knelt behind the body, turned the Thompson on its side, and fanned a storm of bullets into the 5. They crashed back against the compound, bodies jerking as a second spray of slugs hit them before they could even collapse. Johnny got the assault rifle off the Russian and yanked its slide to get a bullet in the chamber. He was after the Brigante who had shot Biddy. To his left and behind him, 8 mercenaries who had been lying in wait in the ravine rushed into view. Johnny whirled. Then he stood there, braced, until the last one was out of the ravine. They came on firing. Johnny raised the assault rifle to his shoulder and took careful aim. He shot the last in the line first, so the others would not see him go down, and then fanned a barrage of shots from there to the first one in the lead. The squad came sprawling forward in an avalanche of dead men. Down in the garage, Lars heard the firing. He sprinted up toward the plateau. Then he heard the assault rifle's sharper bark racketing against the compound. Instantly he knew that Johnny was not dead. No Brigantes had assault rifles. This intermediate ammunition, halfway between a pistol and a rifle, was far more accurate than a Thompson. He knew. He had tried to get some, and he could not. He halted. There was another prolonged burst from the assault rifle. The heavier staccato thud of the submachine guns had dwindled. Lars suddenly hit upon a better course of action for himself. He scuttled backward into the garage. He sprinted into its depths. He found an old wrecked car, and he crawled under the heaps of damaged body plates stripped from it. A far-off hammer of the assault rifle again. He burrowed deeper, sobbing with terror. Johnny raced over to the side to get a view behind the boulder, still trying to nail the mercenary who had shot Biddy. A group of Brigantes sprinted into sight on the other side of the compound, firing submachine guns as they came. Johnny braced himself on a rock, fired over its top, and riddled them. Turl, in his cage, had dropped down below the parapet that held the upright bars, lying flat to be out of the path of bullets. He raised himself cautiously now. It was the animal. He ducked back. At any moment now, he supposed the animal would charge over here and riddle him. It's what Turl would have done. He wondered whether he could get to the hidden explosive charge in the cage and make a grenade out of it, and then he saw he would expose himself if he did so and abandoned the idea. He lay there, panting a little in fear. Taking advantage of trees and boulders, running from one to the next with deadly purpose, Johnny was still trying to get the Brigante who had shot Biddy. The wind was rising. Thunder was sounding amid the gunfire. The slow-flying drone was very near overhead now. Where was that Brigante? Two mercenaries jumped into view in a door and bore down on him with Thompsons. A bullet flicked the side of his neck. Johnny pounded them into rolling balls of dead flesh with the assault rifle. He snapped in a fresh magazine from the bag. The ape he was looking for must have taken refuge back of a wrecked tractor. Johnny probed it with bullets fired to ricochet behind it. Running, he rushed it, firing as he went. There he was. The Brigante ran away. Johnny sighted in on him. The Brigante turned and started to shoot. Johnny sliced him in two with the assault rifle. The sound of the drone grew less. There was no thunder at the moment. Save for the moan of the wind, it seemed strangely quiet. Johnny put another magazine in the assault rifle. He quickly walked over the ground, glancing at one or another of the strewn dead. A mercenary was crawling, trying to get his hands on a Thompson. Johnny put a burst into him. He waited. There seemed to be no sound or movement in the area that would be dangerous. Dancer had broken free in the firing and fled down the slope. Johnny held the assault rifle ready in the crook on his arm. His battle rage died. He went down the slope to Biddy. 9. The little boy lay on the blood-stained ground, his head back and in the direction of the lower slope. Johnny had been certain he was dead. Nobody could take that many submachine gun slugs in the middle of his body, and a small body, and live. He felt awful. He knelt beside the torn boy. He was going to pick the body up, and he put his hand under the head and lifted it slightly. There was a light flutter of breath. Biddy's eyes trembled open. They were glazed in shock, but they saw Johnny, knew him. Biddy was moving his lips, a very faint whisper of a voice. Johnny bent closer to hear.
I wasn't a very good squire, was I, Sir Johnny?
Then tears began to roll sideways from the boy's eyes. Johnny reacted, incredulous. The child thought he had failed. Johnny tried to get it out, tried to speak. He couldn't make his voice work. He was trying to tell Biddy, no, Biddy, you were a great squire. You have just saved my life. But he couldn't speak. The shock was wearing off in the boy. The numbness that had held back the pain vanished. Biddy's hand, which had risen to clutch Johnny's wrist, suddenly clenched bruisingly in a spasm of agony. The body did a wrenching twist. Biddy's head fell to the side. He was dead. No heartbeat, no breath, no pulse. Johnny sat there for a long time, crying. He hadn't been able to speak, to tell Biddy how wrong he was. He was not a bad squire. Not Biddy. Never. After a while, Johnny picked the boy up in his arms and went down the hill. He laid the body very gently on the seat of the ground car. He went back and picked up the dead body of the Russian and carried it to the car and put it in. Windsplitter had seen him from a distance and came up, and the other horses, over their fright now, approached. Johnny put the dead boy on his lap and drove very slowly toward the academy. The horses, seeing him go at that pace, followed. The little cortege crossed the plain. It took them a long time to make the trip. Johnny stopped at last beside the trench where the 67 cadets had fought the last battle so very long ago. He just sat there holding Biddy's body. A cadet sentry had seen them approach. In a little while, cadets started to come out of the buildings. Word spread further and more came. The schoolmaster, from an upper window, saw the crowd gathering around the ground car and went out. Dunnell Dean and Angus and Care came up to the fringe of the crowd. Johnny got out, holding the dead boy. He wanted to talk to them, and he couldn't speak. Several truckloads of Russians suddenly roared up to a halt, and they spilled out, joining the crowd. Several cadets raced back to the armory and came out with assault rifles and shoulder bags of magazines, and began to pass them around to men who were looking in the direction of the compound. An angry mutter was rising higher and higher among them. Several cadets raced back to their rooms to get personal sidearms and came back, buckling on belts and loading magazines. The thunder of the mountains reverberated now and then across the plain, and an angry cold wind whipped around the mob. A truckload of Russians who had swung over by the compound arrived back and stopped in a geyser of dust. The Russians were shouting and pointing toward the compound, trying to say what was over there now. No one could understand them. A small ground car raced up from the direction of Denver, spraying clods of dirt as it screeched to a stop. The pilot officer in charge of drones jumped out, a stream of drone printout pictures crackling in the wind as he forced his way into the crowd, trying to tell them it had all come through on a drone overfly, trying to show people what had happened. He had ripped the printouts and the disks out of the machines and come at once. A coordinator was finally able to make himself heard. He had gotten now what the single Russian truck had seen at the compound.
"The Brigantes are all dead over there, a whole commando. Is that Cyclo Turtle still alive over there?"
somebody shouted. There was an angry roar from the crowd. Several surged forward to see whether Turtle was visible in the pictures.
"He's still alive,"
shouted the Russian's coordinator, who had gotten the information from the truck. The crowd surged, and some started to climb into the Russian trucks. The Russians had been drawn up in a line by a Russian officer, and they were checking their rifles on command. Colonel Ivan, who had come to stand near Johnny, was gazing, stricken with guilt, at the face of the dead boy.
"This Cyclo dies."
Johnny had finally gotten a grip on himself. Still holding the boy, he climbed to the top of the ground car. He looked down at them, and they quieted to hear him.
"No," said Johnny. "No, you must not do anything now.